The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hi, this is Mike Edwards with another edition of the Armchair Traveler from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And during the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the National Geographic Traveler, the News and Observer, Washington Post, and AAA Go Magazine. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, let me remind you that neither the Triangle Radio Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles we will be reading. They are selected merely for your enjoyment and edification. And today on Armchair Traveler, our journey begins with a look at the city guide from the April-May 2018 issue of National Geographic Traveler. Writer and editor Christopher Hall provides our introduction. And it's about Copenhagen and why go now. In Denmark's enchanting capital, an energetic population is upping the cool quotient. Copenhagen's most fabled resident, the Little Mermaid, still lounges on her harbor rock, luring thousands of photo-hungry visitors each day. The storybook pavilions of Tivoli Gardens continue to delight kids of all ages, and the historic townhouses of the Nyhavn neighborhood remain as colorful as when Hans Christian Andersen lived and wrote here 175 years ago. But make no mistake, in recent years, Copenhagen has become far more than a quaint destination. With the average age of its residents having dropped to 35 and a quarter of its population of non-Danish origin, a youthful energy and international spirit now animate this creative city that routinely lands on a list of the world's happiest and coolest places to live. Wander the interconnected islands centered on a historic harbor, and you'll encounter the contrast that make the city so exciting. Stately old churches stand near angular contemporary architecture. Restaurants like the famed Norma create wildly inventive new Nordic cuisine inside repurposed industrial buildings. Visit in the summer when the evening light lingers in the sky and life spills onto waterside squares, or in the colder, darker months when interiors turn hygge, Danish for a sense of cozy well-being with glowing candles and shirling-draped chairs. Whatever the season, you'll find a fairy tale town that fully embraces the real world. And now the author breaks down into some categories: what to eat, what to see, and where to stay. And we begin with Edith Copenhagen and the Children of Noma. René Redzepi's Temple of New Nordic Cuisine spawned a movement. Splashes of graffiti bring a shock of energy to the soaring concrete walls of X-Factory Amos, a certified organic restaurant whose prefix menu focuses on seasonal dishes like dry-aged beef with smoked sea snails or a roasted beet sherbet accompanied by sour cream, rhubarb, and a crumble of salted grains and pickled pine. Organic ingredients also inspire the inventive cooking at Radio, where unfinished wood floors add a warm touch to the Scandinavian modern dining room. Depending on the time of year, fork tender lamb or langoustine tartar spiked with radish and dill might appear on a 3 or 4, 5-course tasting menu. Beverage pairings include a choice-only option with unusual concoctions like white grape tinged with chamomile. A pub-like vibe animates Tiny Manfred's, a basement-level wine bar in Norrbro, where an eclectic roster of natural vintages complements dishes such as trout with fennel cream and the popular tartar of beef served family style at the kitchen's own pace. Now we have what we call a smørrebrød, and this is lunch like a local on open-faced sandwiches. That's the translation. And first of all, we have the Torvehallen. Amid the bustle of this food hall, Hollandaise lunch counter dishes up traditional combos like roast beef topped with cucumber salad and horseradish, sit at the small bar or at one of the tables dotting the hugely popular market. Another location is Slottsgården Husgietkik. Yep, all four words there and more. Herring in all its guises, fried, marinated, smoked, pickled, plus roast pork and other classic toppings star at this old-school lunch-only spot that's a favorite of government officials who work nearby. And then we have Elmans, Among the innovative seasonal selection at this restaurant in Tiny Dell, or deli, I should say, are cold-smoked salmon with dill emulsion and pork rib with rhubarb compote. You get the idea, they like rhubarb over there. If tables are full, get takeout sandwiches for a picnic at the Botanical Garden. So there you go. Eat it at Copenhagen. Now, what to see while you're there? Here we go. Touring on two wheels from historic hip to the city's neighborhoods are best seen by bike. And we have four selections for you. Number one is the Inner Harbor. A time-traveling spin around the Inner Harbor takes you from Nehaven, where the old townhouses have sprouted street-level restaurants, to Christian Schaun's 21st-century Copenhagen Opera House, whose vast canopy roof has hosted world cliff-diving championships. A few blocks inland, catch the changing of the guard at Amelienberg, residence of the Queen, and visit the Design Museum Denmark to see Anne Jacobsen's iconic 1958 egg chair and other objects from Denmark's rich design heritage. Now on to number two, Vesterbro. On a ride through Vesterbro, you'll witness firsthand the transformation of this once rough district into one of Europe's it neighborhoods. On streets like Istegade and Vanadamsvidt, sample Danish microbrews before heading to the old meatpacking quarter, Kedbien, now a thrumming nightlife hub. In the Tony enclave of Frederiksberg, stroll the alleys of Santa Marken Park and visit its former underground reservoir, now an avant-garde vineyard called Sistenep. And then we have at number three, Nørrebro, a culty whirl of kebab shops, vintage fashion boutiques, Asian markets, and coffee houses. Edgy Nørrebro, arranged as the city's emerging haven of hip. The Green Path cycling route cuts across this northern neighborhood, passing through high-concept playgrounds like Superkilden, where kids frolic in a square paved in shades of red. Window shop along gentrified Jagersbrogade, and you pay your respects to Hans Christian Andersen and Søren Kierkegaard in the Assistens Cemetery. And finally, number four is where to see it. It's Slotsholmen. Fans of the hit Danish television drama Borgen, a nickname for Christiansborg Palace, Denmark's most seat of government, will recognize locations all around this district where you can tour parliament or royal reception rooms. Treasures of the National Museum of Denmark Copenhagen include medieval rune stones and Viking-era silver. Nearby, Mykonosberg Glyptotek Art Museum claims 57 Paul Gauguin works, plus a roof terrace overlooking thrill seekers at Tivoli Amusement Park. And then we take a look at where to stay when it comes to being new, classy, and trendy, Danish digs with a past, and hand-hewn 200-year-old Pomeranian pine beams provide a rustic foil for contemporary Danish furnishings at the newly renovated 71 Nehaven Hotel. Filling a pair of historic spice warehouses, the Harborside Lodging offers water views from many of its 130 rooms and a new Thai restaurant. C, little sister to Copenhagen's Michelin-starred Kien Kien, the vintage brick facade of Andersen Boutique Hotel presents a staid face to the world, but the interior of this 69-room, one-time block of flats in Vesterbro pops with contemporary design and color from the lobby's clear plastic wingback chairs with fuchsia cushions to the black dot coat hooks by Norwegian designer Lars Torno that sprout from walls. In the evening, guests gather round a glowing glass bar for mix-your-own cocktails or complimentary wine. Situated in a trio of renovated 1869 apartment buildings in the heart of town, Hotel Saunders evokes a posh private residence from the 1940s, complete with flickering fireplace in its drawing-room-like lobby. Plush upholstered chairs, teak-toned wood beds, and touches of rattan lend to the 54 rooms a pared-down elegance with a colonial accent. Light floods the plant-filled rooftop conservatory even on gray days, making it a prime spot for sipping tea, coffee, or akavit. And then we have some literary travels for you, Copenhagen by the Book, and this is Brooke Sabin's little inclusion in this article. And she tells us The Danish Girl by David Ebershoff. It might be something we'd want to read. Danish painter Einar Wagner inspired this tale of one person's gender transition for the 2015 Oscar-winning movie. Filming locations included the Copenhagen Town Hall, Royal Danish Theater, and Nehaven neighborhood. Then we have Smell a Sense of Snow by Peter Hoeg. In this suspense novel turned film, Copenhagen makes a chilling setting for a mysterious death. Follow amateur sleuth Smilla from the snowy rooftops of Christian Humph to the ice capes of Greenland. And then Winter's Tales, Isaac Dennison. Best known for Out of Africa, Dennison, a.k.a. Karen Blixen, also penned 11 imaginative short stories giving evocative descriptions of 19th century Denmark. Her home, now a museum, is about 16 miles north of Copenhagen. So there you have a trip to enjoy. Well, how about a road trip? In the road trip section of the April-May 2018 issue of National Geographic Traveler, writer Adam H. Graham is going to offer us Switzerland's Grand Tour, and this includes 1,021 miles, 7 days on the road, and some best brews, the Brarier Lacquer and the Appenzell, and then we have top vintage watch shop, the Bayer Chronometry in Zurich. Though relatively small in size, roughly equal to New Hampshire and Vermont combined, Switzerland packs a big punch. It's home to a dozen UNESCO sites, a topographic diversity that includes palm trees and glaciers, not to mention four languages to call them by, and some of Europe's most modern cities, contrasted with the tiny alpine villages. The Grand Tour of Switzerland encompasses several top attractions and myriad new ways to absorb all the local flavors. Fuel up with snack boxes available for purchase along the route that contain regional specialties. And keep an eye out for the large red frames marking especially photogenic scenes. In 2017, the Grand Tour was fitted with electric charging stations, car charging stations, letting visitors explore one of the world's greenest nations with a minuscule carbon footprint. Read on for some of the favorite stops driving clockwise from Zurich. And we have about 8 stops for you. First, Zurich in the spirit. Zurich's Romanesque Grossmünster Church, dubbed Salt and Pepper for its twin spires, is said to have been commissioned by Charlemagne, but the current structure was not completed until around 1230, long after his death. As a reminder of his influence, figurative jabs of his likeness protrude from the spires, while the crypt displays a stone statue of him. Stained glass windows by Swiss artist Augusto Giacometti were added in 1933 and set by German artist Sigmar Polk in 2009. On to Jeseroog. Peak performance. In 2015, Basel-based architects Herzog and de Meuron planted their signature style in the Jeseroog, a mountain rising 7,421 feet in eastern Switzerland, Tuggenberg district. The large alpine hiking and skiing area is now home to dazzling mile-high modernism in the form of an elongated structure that serves as a gondola station and a restaurant, offering a cozy interior, soaring sightlines to neighboring countries. Number 3 is Zernez, Flora and Fauna. With 42,000 plus acres, the Swiss National Park is home to alpine animals like ibex, chamois, and marmots. As endangered wildflowers, another rare treasure found here, the sounds of Romansch, one of Switzerland's four official languages still spoken in these valleys. Ephesus. Local sips. In the Lavaux region of French-speaking Canton Vaud, terraced vineyards like the hills above Lake Geneva. One of the standout villages, Ephesus, offers spectacular views of the lake and the French Alps. Be sure to sample regional wine varietals like Doral Gamay and Plant Robert. And then on to Bern. Bern. And this is called Clockwise, Keeping Time Since the 16th Century. Bern's ornate Ziklag is an astronomical clock said to have inspired one-time resident Albert Einstein to develop his theory of relativity. To learn more about the famed physicist's life in Bern, head to the city's Einstein Museum. Then we have Levetezzo. Jumping for joy, take a short detour to hike along the unfathomably turquoise Veracasa River, with weaves which weaves like a noodle through Italian-speaking Canton Ticino. If you dare, join locals for a bracing plunge into the chilly water from the ancient Roman bridge Ponte di Salte. On the Rhine, in Basel. At the borders with France and Germany, Basel features well-preserved old town where walking tours explore sites like the bustling Marktplatz. Don't forget to catch a ride on one of the Rhine River ferries, which are propelled solely by the current. And finally, Entelbruck Biosphere Reserve. Surprising sights, a lesser-known landscape of moors, peat bogs, and karst ridges make up this UNESCO-designated area in Canton Lucerne. Along with nature's bounty, find fairy tale themed hiking trails and the pilgrimage site of Hilligrutz. So there you go. Lots of fun to go in Switzerland. Wow. Well, why do you travel? Well, that question comes with myriad answers, obviously, depending on who you ask. Associated Press writer Pat Eaton Robb found one traveler in West Hartford, Connecticut, whose travel expectations might be characterized as daunting, to say the least. For All Women, Tireless Mom plans her ninth Everest summit, appeared in the April 18, 2018 issue of the News and Observer. Between raising two daughters and working as a dishwasher at Whole Foods, Lapka Sherpa just doesn't have time for training to climb Mount Everest. Even so, she has done it record eight times and hopes to outdo herself yet again. The 44-year-old native of Nepal holds the world record for summits of Everest by a woman and plans to return this month with what has become an annual expedition to the top of the world. My body knows that I have already been this high. It's like a computer. It figures it out very quickly. My body knows the high altitude. It remembers. Lhakpa Sherpa is recognized by Guinness World Records and is well known in mountaineering circles, but she spends most of the year living a modest life in obscurity in Connecticut, where she moved with her now ex-husband, another well-known climber, in 2002. She gets up most days at 6 a.m. to walk her two daughters, 16-year-old Sunny and 11-year-old Shiny, to school. Then, because she does not know how to drive, she often walks the 2 miles to her job, where she washes dishes in the prepared food sections and takes out the garbage. You would never know she hiked Everest unless you knew her and talked to her about it, says Dan Furtado, the manager who hired Lhakpa at Whole Foods. She's the most humble person I know, and her work ethic is astounding. Lhakpa says she would have liked to have been a doctor or an airplane pilot, but that as a girl growing up in the Sherpa ethnic community with her 4 brothers and 7 sisters, she wasn't even allowed to attend school. Without a formal education, she has taken jobs in Connecticut, cleaning houses, as a clerk at a local convenience store, and as a dishwasher, she said, to give her daughters and now-grown son a chance at a better life in the U.S. My rent is expensive here, she says, but this is where the best schools are. Lhakpa says she is used to overcoming adversity. Sherpa girls were discouraged from climbing, but she was a tomboy and would not be deterred from helping the men in her family, serving as a porter to bring gear to Everest base camps. Becoming a climber was harder, she said, especially after the first Nepali woman to reach the summit, Pesang Lhamu Sherpa, died on her way down the mountain in 1993. Lhakpa Sherpa, in 2000, joined an expedition of 5 women who persuaded the government to give them a permit. She was the first Nepali woman to reach the summit and return alive. The record number of summits for a man is 21 by another of the ethnic Sherpa, Apa Shepper, according to the Guinness. Ann Parmeter, a field hockey coach at Trinity College in Hartford, climbed with Lhakpa on an ill-fated Everest expedition in 2004. There were serious issues with that climb, including a physical confrontation between Lhakpa and her husband at the time that left Lhakpa unconscious. Parmeter says it's impressive to see what Lhakpa has been able to overcome, both physically and mentally. She's obviously been blessed with amazing physiology that allows her to live here, not train, and go back and adapt very quickly to that high-altitude environment, she says. She can do that, function, and really be strong. Says Lhakpa, I wanted to show that a woman can do men's jobs. There is no difference in climbing a mountain. I climb for all women. Lakhma says she does have some fears about climbing, especially who would take care of her daughters if there were an accident on Everest. She was at camp in 2015 when an earthquake hit the mountain, triggering avalanches that killed about 20 people on Everest. Her daughter Shiny says it was a week before they received the phone call telling them their mother was okay. Lakhpa Sherpa saves up each year for the plane ticket back to Nepal and climbs with an expedition company run by one of her brothers. They will guide about 50 people, mostly Europeans, up the mountain this year, she said. Next year, she plans to make a second attempt to summit K2, the world's second highest peak, for the first time. This season, for the first time, she has a sponsor, Black Diamond. A mountain sports equipment company is outfitting her with new gear and providing monetary support. Lakhpa also received proclamation last month from her adopted hometown west of Hartford that proclaims her the Queen of Mount Everest. But to many of her co-workers, she's just Lakhpa. "I don't need to be famous," she says. "I want to keep doing my sport. If I don't do my sport, I feel tired. I want to push my limits." Wow. Well, climbing the world's tallest peaks is just one of many reasons people travel. No matter your quest or travel favorites, I suspect that good food combined with some special ambiance is something shared by many of you as you go around the world. Well, writer Alexandra Petchy found magical meals in a Massachusetts town better known for its ties to the occult. Her article appeared in the March 15th, 2018 issue of the Washington Post. Salem. The name alone conjures specters of skeletal tree branches stretching toward a misty, moonlit Massachusetts sky, menacing black-cloaked Puritans and witches, ghosts and ghouls lurking around every brick-paved corner. It's true that Salem has both earned and cultivated its spooky reputation as the Halloween capital of the world. Yet, in recent years, the Witch City has also become a food city, dense with creative restaurants, cafes, patisseries, breweries, a distillery, and just like any self-respecting foodie town, a food tour. Tucked on a quiet side street in the heart of downtown is A.J. King Artisan Bakers. And it's ajkingbakery.com online if you'd like to look at more of this. It's at 48 Central Street in Salem, where husband and wife team Andy and Jackie King craft a delicious array of lovingly made breads, pastries, and sweet treats made from locally sourced, seasonally available ingredients. The cozy, rustic industrial space is packed with locals sipping coffee, knitting, reading the newspaper, and catching up with friends around small copper-top tables. Tuck into featured breakfast pastries such as savory mushroom croissant for $4.25, redolent with oyster mushrooms, goat cheese, shallots, and thyme, or the pain au raisin, $3.65, made with rum from Salem's own Deacon Giles Gallery. Try the seasonal danishes, $2.95 each, in rotating flavors such as garlic scape pesto with cherry tomatoes or sweet lemon cream cheese with mixed berries. You also can't go wrong with a fat slice of sour cream coffee cake with thick walnut cinnamon topping for $2.50, or a blueberry muffin, $2.85, or even a loaf of artisanal bread or bag of homemade granola, $8.30 for later. And everything, down to the caramel syrup, swirled with cappuccinos, chai for lattes, and chocolate ganache, all made on site. Salem was one of America's most important seaports for international trade in spices, tea, silks, and other exotic goods during the late 18th and early 19th centuries. The maritime legacy means sampling seafood is de rigueur in Salem, and Sea Level Oyster Bar, find it at sealeveloysterbar.com for more information online, sealeveloysterbar.com. They're at 94 Wharf Street, offers the perfect spot perched at the edge of Salem Harbor on Pickering Wharf and overlooking the Salem National Maritime Historic Site and Derby Wharf Light Station. Alfresco dining on the deck is lovely during the warm weather, but scenic views are guaranteed any time of the year in the expansive two-floor restaurant. As the name promises, the oysters market price at Sea Level's Raw Bar play a starring role on the menu, but there are lots of New England classics for people who aren't fans of the briny bivalves, including densely packed lobster rolls market price, rich buttery crumbled rich cracker topped seafood pie, that'll cost you $22, and creamy New New England clam chowder for $7. If seafood isn't your thing, you're still in luck, thanks to options such as a sweet potato kale and goat cheese pizza for $13, pickled pear salad with goat cheese, blueberries, and sugared walnuts, $8, and fried pickle-topped burger for $15. Then we have Bambolina, and online, check it out at BambolinaRestaurant.com. That's BambolinaRestaurant.com. They're at 288 Derby Street in Salem. It's serious about its Neapolitan-style pizza without being even a little bit pretentious about it. Shared plates are standouts here, and there are lots of options, such as Italian street corn for $6, roasted corn on the cob loaded with a tangy mix of house Caesar dressing, ricotta salata, and grana padano cheeses, and a healthy dash of Espaletti pepper powder, the garlicky fire-roasted Castelvetrano olives, $6, and the zucchini ceviche, a light salad of greens, zucchini ribbons, ricotta salata, and lemon dressing. Wow. You have to be a superb chef to put all that together, doesn't it? And then the charcuterie is another great shared option. Whether you choose individual plates, such as the rabbit and pork pâté for $11, corned beef tongue for $8, or opt for a board of five chef-selected items and garnishes for $24. For dinner, it's all about the pizza. For purists, there's the margherita, $13.50. Margherita for $13.50. And crispy edges, soft interior, topped with tomato, porcherino, and mozzarella, with whole fresh basil leaves. Then there's the sweet, savory, and super satisfying beef and blue for $16.50 with cured beef, gorgonzola cheese, caramelized pearl onions, and the gentlest hint of honey. Wash it all down with wines by the glass or bottle, or craft beers such as the Greenhead IPA, made a few miles up the coast by Newburyport Brewing. Wow, sounds like Salem is quite the place to go if you want to find something other than maybe witches and spooky things. Well, here we go. We just received the May-June 2018 issue of AAA Go Magazine. In the couple of minutes we have left, let's check out the Carolinas events calendar. Coming up very soon, in fact, April 30, 31st, we have the Southport Spring Festival. It's at Franklin Square in Southport, North Carolina. You can walk along the historic waterfront and shop 160 vendors. There's a 5K walk and run, children's activities, and more. It's all free. Check it out at ncbrunswick.com, ncbrunswick.com. In May, let's see here, May 4th, we have the Blue Ridge Festival in downtown Pickens, South Carolina. Classic car cruise in with hundreds of classic cars, live music and food. Proceeds benefit upstate charities. It's all free. BlueRidgeFest.com brings more information to you online. Then we have May 4th guided tours at historic Grovewood Village, Grovewood Village, Asheville, North Carolina. Peek into Biltmore Industries history and view the original loom, spinning mule, and much more. And that's free, and you can check it out at Grovewood.com, Grovewood.com. And then May 4th and 5th, a taste of Beaufort Music, Arts and Seafood Festival, Henry C. Chambers Waterfront Park. And that should be Beaufort. I'm sorry, it's Beaufort Music. Beaufort, South Carolina. It's Beaufort in North Carolina. Live music, handmade arts, crafts, and yummy low country dishes. It's all free. DowntownBeaufort.com gets you more information. That's DowntownBeaufort.com. Other thing coming up, too, on May 5th is Just Plain Dog Show at Dallas Park, Dallas, North Carolina. Dog owners of all ages 6 and older can participate, and that's also free. Visit Gaston.org. Has much more information for you, so if you'd like to attend that May 5th event, Just Plain Dog Show in Dallas, North Carolina. And my friends, that brings us to an end for today's episode of Armchair Traveler. We hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be listening next time. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Content of our program intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. Questions and comments may be directed to 919-832-5138. Bye-bye.